Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now, just before we came on air, the former Taoiseach Leo Varadkar joined me in the studio. As we know, he revealed last night that he is not going to contest the next general election. And while people may not have been very surprised by the announcement, I began by asking him why he has decided at this point in time to leave politics behind.
Yeah, look, I suppose it's a decision that I wanted to announce at my local party organisation. You know, these are people who have been canvassing for me for 20, 25 years and wanted them to hear it first. I don't think it was a huge surprise. I think most people kind of expected it when I made the decision not to continue as Taoiseach, but was keen to give local councillors, local senator in my area a chance to get ready for a convention in September. And for me, it's just come to a point in my life now where I feel I've made my contribution to politics and would like to do something else. I don't exactly know what that is yet, but have the opportunity now to explore some different options.
And it's not a case, is it, that something has happened to prompt this decision? Because it has always been the case that you've said you would do politics up to the age of about 50. Now you're a good bit shy of that, but there was always a plan to have a second act. Was there?
Yeah, like I suppose I had that in mind. I was elected very young, at the age of 23 or 24. I'm over 20 years of public rep now, so it hasn't been a short shift. And I never saw myself as somebody who'd be a career politician. I remember saying before that I had this idea that I'd be doing something else by the time I was 50. If I did run again, I would be older than 50, assuming the next Dáil goes the full term. But it's not that I have written down in a file somewhere an exact life plan. I don't, but it was always my thinking that I'd do something else. I've had the privilege to be a doctor, worked at that for 7 years, served in politics, and now's a chance to do something new.
And that something new is not defined yet. You don't have a plan, do you?
I don't know for sure. You know, certainly I've had a number of interesting offers that I haven't really been able to explore because, you know, I'm a full-time TD. I'm committed to seeing out my term, serving my constituents in Dublin West. But there's a chance now to explore them and see what else life holds.
And is there any particular area that you can say interests you?
And not yet. You know, definitely. I suppose I don't see what wants to go into any details or break any confidence people. Like, I don't have anything lined up. I haven't written the CV yet or done any interviews, but there are a number of suggestions and offers that have been made to me, and I'm sort of keen to figure them out.
Well, listen, there's a long list now of Fine Gael TDs who've said that they're not going to run again. I think we're up on around the 15 mark. Do you think there will be more? Are you the last?
I think there may well be more. I don't know that for certain. I don't think there'll be many more. We're not far off roughly half of Fine Gael TDs not running again. That's actually the same for Labour and not far off for the Social Democrats. I think sometimes commentators read too much into that. You know, the truth is the vast majority of people who aren't running again have been in politics for 20, 30, 40 years. So it's not unusual that people would step down after that period of time, and is definitely a chance for the party to renew itself and bring new candidates forward.
I mean, you're comparing it there to very small parties, but when we look at, say, Fianna Fáil or Sinn Féin, we're not seeing the same rate of attrition. Can you explain that? Do you know why that is?
Yeah, well, the vast majority of Sinn Féin TDs were only elected in the last two elections. So the number that have served more than 20 years for Sinn Féin is very small. And then Fianna Fáil had their huge decimation there back there in 2011, and they have a number of TDs who have very long service, but not as big as we do.
So you don't think there's a specific issue here with Fine Gael and what might be coming down the tracks, which is leading to people saying I'm not going again?
No, like people love conspiracy theories and the ideas that there are secret agendas and so on, but every TD, certainly in Fine Gael, and indeed Labour and the Social Democrats and Fianna Fáil have announced they're not running again, have given their reasons, and I actually believe them.
Listen, going into confidence supply in 2016, then in 2020, the full coalition with Fianna Fáil, we've been led to a place where many people say they can't tell the difference between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael now. Can you define for us where Fine Gael are is a vastly different party to Fianna Fáil. Can you tell us what it is?
Well, I don't think we're vastly different, but there are differences. You know, we have a different history and a different tradition. I think it's fair to say that we're a bit more committed to European integration than they would be, for example. You know, supported things like PESCO for the Common Security and Defence long before Fianna Fáil did. We'd have a somewhat different approach to Northern Ireland, although that has changed in recent years. We would be more enthusiastic about reducing income taxes than they would. Not that they're against that, but we would always be pushing that a bit more. On housing, for example, we'd probably push home ownership more strongly than social housing. They would do it the other way around. But the differences are not huge. That's the truth. I think we're rapidly becoming sister parties, and you see that formation happening in other jurisdictions. We're together now nearly 9 years, and I think there's a very good chance after the next election that you could see another coalition led by Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, and possibly another rotating Taoiseach.
And could you see the parties merging?
I don't see that in the foreseeable future, but like I say,
why not when they're not vastly different and they're sister parties and they've worked well together for 9 years and might possibly work again together in the next government?
Because there are policy differences, some of which I mentioned. There are personality differences too, and there's differences in history and tradition. And sometimes when you add two parties together, what you get at the end of that is actually a bigger party that's smaller, if that makes sense. We saw that before with, you know, Labour and Democratic Left when they merged, for example. You see something very similar, I think, at the moment with Labour and the Social Democrats taking a decision not to merge.
So there wouldn't be an electoral benefit in doing that, is what you're saying?
There might not be. Mm-hmm. I don't think that can be assumed. But, you know, the two parties have worked very well in government together. I think there's a very good chance of the government being re-elected. Sincerely hope that Fine Gael is going to be the larger party in the next election and Simon Harris can continue as Taoiseach. But a good chance that the two parties will come together again.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about what you've achieved and maybe what you might regret, because you said in 2017 you planned to build a republic of opportunity which was aimed to create those opportunities, build a better and fairer Ireland. Do you feel you've done that?
In part, we have full employment now, which I think is a significant achievement. We've made some very good steps towards universal healthcare. You know, healthcare is free or affordable for more people. Child poverty is down. Income inequality is also down. And also, you know, we see a lot of moves, for example, to make education more accessible to people with things like the free school books and the free school meals and reducing college fees. But it's, you know, always going to be a project that's very much underway. And I do think the country is a more equal place for women, for example, for people from minority backgrounds like the LGBT community. So I think we're on track, but it's not a project that's by any means complete.
You did put that idea on the table of the 30% tax rate, and you spoke about rewarding people who get up early in the morning. That didn't become a settled policy, despite the fact that you were leader of the party when you first set out that plan or first suggested it. Do you regret that?
It is actually Fine Gael policy and was adopted at Ardesh, but isn't government policy. The most important thing for me was that we set very clearly on the agenda that there would be income tax reductions every year and that we would reward work. There's lots of ways to reward work, by the way. It's not just tax cuts. You can also have pay increases, and we've done that too, and brought in things like sick pay and parental leave and paternity benefit and a lot of things that I'm very proud of being part of.
Yeah, but you did publicly set that plan out as something that might happen, and you had the finance portfolio at the time. Pascal Donoghue had it. So why didn't it happen if that's what you wanted to do?
Because we didn't get agreement from Fianna Fáil on that. And an example of another policy difference, we would be more enthusiastic about reducing income tax for working people than they would. Not that they're against it, but it's something that we're that would be a stronger part of our agenda. The same would be around supporting small business, for example.
So it wasn't that your big idea didn't get purchase amongst your own colleagues in Fine Gael.
The Fine Gael party in Ardesh voted to officially make it our policy, so it was adopted as our policy. But you know, one thing I would like to say about income tax, like I remember not that long ago, certainly in the 2020 election and after that, Fine Gael was the only party that was pushing for reducing income tax, that was saying that people who have middle incomes, who are, you know, earning 30, 40, 50,000 shouldn't be paying the highest rate. That's pretty much settled policy now. And that's something that I feel I was part of achieving. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a tax package now in the upcoming budget of 1.4 billion euros. People not that long ago were saying that we shouldn't have tax packages of anything, you know, around a third of that. So we've won the argument on tax as far as I'm concerned, and I hope that my successors keep winning that argument.
Not when it comes to the Fiscal Advisory Council, who consistently come out and say that the government is overspending.
No, but we've won it with the public and the politicians.
And that is what you would say matters when it comes to elections. What matters as well is what's happening with housing. And, you know, we have the housing crisis. So many people locked out of owning their own home. Even renting your own place now for so many has become nigh on impossible. Is that something that you regret? Do you see now that there was a way back a number of years ago to change policy on housing and on spending earlier in the game for you, and we wouldn't be where we are now?
Yeah, like we are making a lot of progress on housing now, and I'm not going to rattle off the facts. Your listeners will have heard them before, and they'll see the number of new homes being built all over the country at the moment. But there are a lot of things that we have done in recent years on reflection, I'm sorry we didn't do much sooner. You know, things like, you know, first home, things like cost rental, things like the grants to bring derelict homes back into use. And a lot of the time we made those decisions because we didn't believe that the economic picture, the fixed fiscal picture, would be so rosy. And that's the excessive caution that I've spoken about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the official advice and the official estimates was that the economy wouldn't bounce back as quickly as it did after the crash in 2010, 2011. The official advice was that Brexit would damage our economy more than it did. Now, in part, it didn't damage our economy because of the deal we secured. We bounced back way quicker after the pandemic economically. And I think if we'd known that, there are decisions and investments that we made around housing and climate and transport that we would have made 2 or 3 years earlier, and we'd be seeing more results now.
Did you push back?
Hindsight is 2020.
Okay, you know? But did you push back against that advice at the time, or did you just accept it?
No. I would have very much been pushing for greater investment in capital spending. And you'll remember one of the things that I did early on as Taoiseach was Project Ireland 2040.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the step change in terms of increasing public investment. It's gone up from $4 billion a year when I first entered government to $14 billion a year this year. But I would have liked to have done it quicker, for sure.
Okay, but did you have a finance minister in place who is, Pascal Donoghue, who's known for being cautious? Was he saying to you, listen, we've got to be careful here with what we have?
Well, sure, that's his job. And that's now certainly Minister Chambers' job. And we were always able to come to compromises. And, you know, this would have happened across government.
Mm.
Certainly in this government, I think it's probably true that, you know, that the three party leaders would have been pushing for increased spending, and the two money ministers would have been saying, you know, hold on now.
But you're saying the money ministers now, in hindsight, were wrong.
I don't think it's as simplistic as that. And one thing I do regret about politics is that we don't enough talk about the actual policy issues. You know, it's always turned into, you know, people try to turn it into a bun fight. You know, Leo versus Micheál, or Leo versus Pascal, or Eamon versus, you know, Roderick or whatever. And I think that's regrettable, because that
this is more about,
means we don't take issues seriously or people seriously.
But this is more about decision making and really learning from where we are now and what could have been happened 10 years ago in order to avoid the housing crisis being as critical, you know, as it currently is.
Well, I might put it a different way. We're blessed in Ireland in that we've a really good civil service and public service, and really good people working for us in government. And I've worked with some really great people down the years, and I hope to stay in touch with them. But there is a general bias towards caution and conservatism when it comes to any spending, any policy change. The advice will always tilt towards reasons for not doing it rather than reasons for doing it. And I think it's the job of politicians to push for change and push for reform. And you would have seen that on economic and investment decisions. We would have seen it on COVID as well. I was very much in favour, for example, of the first lockdown, felt it was necessary, was the right thing to do. Towards the end of the pandemic, I would have been very much of the view that some of these restrictions had gone on for too long.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have been very public about
yes,
that.
Yes, we saw how frustrated
I
you were.
I thought the schools were closed for too long. I thought the special schools should never have been closed. I don't think housing construction should have been stopped, for example. But, you know, it's not that when you're Taoiseach or you're a minister or you're in the Dáil, you've absolute power. You don't. You share power with other people, and there's a bureaucracy.
You're not saying the civil servants hold the balance of power, are you?
No, what I am saying is that if people believe that the Taoiseach has ultimate absolute power, and that ministers in their departments have ultimate absolute power, and the TDs decide everything that happens in the country. Like, that's not true. The way power is exercised is a lot more complicated than that.
Okay, can we talk about what happened in Coolock in North Dublin in recent days, reminiscent, of course, of what happened in November during the Dublin riots? The rise of the extreme right-wing sentiment, that's grown over the period that you have been in office. When did you first spot it or become aware of it or think that this might be a problem?
I'm not sure exactly when. It's certainly a couple of years ago. It has always been there. It manifests itself now in different ways. I always knew it was going to come. Ireland is a normal European country, and almost every country in the European Union has experienced high levels of migration. Big increases in the number of asylum seekers in recent years. We're not unique in any way. In fact, we're just one of the last to experience it. Up until recent years, the number of asylum seekers coming to Ireland would have been well below the European average. It's only now hitting or exceeding the European average in the last two or three years. And we've seen across Europe and across the world, the Western world anyway, that when that happens, there is a backlash. We did our best to plan for it, but it's not something that's easily preventable. It is something that has to be managed. But I do believe it's a phase that the Western world is going through. You know, there are a lot of people who either struggle to understand or oppose or can't cope with the way the world is changing, economically, demographically, becoming more globalised, becoming more interconnected. And there's going to be a backlash against that. But the future isn't theirs.
But if housing was in a better place, that sentiment mightn't be expressed as freely, do you think?
Not necessarily. So what we see, where there's a backlash against migration around the world, whatever the problem is gets blamed on the migrants. So, you know, in Ireland, one of our biggest problems is, of course, the housing shortage. So the migrants get the blame. In other countries, it's crime. In other countries where there's high levels of unemployment, the migrants are taking our jobs. Even in Greece, where there were forest fires, that was blamed on the migrants. So you see, go back in history, you know, the plague was blamed on Jewish people and on migrants. So you see, you know, throughout history, people blaming the other.
Yeah.
The people who don't look like me, don't behave like me, don't speak like me, they must be the cause of all my problems. Okay. And we have to call it out for what it is. That's not to say that people don't have genuine concerns. When the population increases dramatically, it puts pressure on services. But blaming, migrants or people who look different, behave different for all my problems or the country's problems, that's not right and based in fact.
There's a report in some of the papers today about a serious threat that was made to you personally. Now, I see from your comments in those reports that you're not able to talk specifically about that case, but were there times when you were fearful for your own safety?
Look, there were a number of times, on the night of the Dublin riots, I was advised not to go home, and I didn't. I stayed somewhere else. But I never let that bother me. And one thing I would have asked the Gardaí was, not to advise me or give me too much information about security threats unless I really needed to know for some reason.
You didn't want to know about them?
No, I didn't want to be distracted by, potential security threats are always looking over my shoulder. So I asked that they not give me detailed briefings unless there was some particular reason to do so. And I think that was probably the right decision.
So did that impede your ability to live a normal life outside of your work life then? If that's what you're saying to them, I want to go about my business and my leisure time without having those threats in my mind.
Yeah, look, I think I was very fortunate that I was able to lead a relatively normal life during my time as Taoiseach and in politics. And now I'm going to lead a very normal life. And I'm kind of grateful for that. I've spoken to people who are heads of government in other countries or people who are senior politicians in other countries. And, you know, some of them can't even go to a restaurant, because they have to shut down the whole restaurant or the block. Some of them can't go to the shops, can't go to the cinema, really do live in a security bubble. I'm really grateful that wasn't the case for me, and largely isn't the case in Ireland. Yet, like, of course, there are security threats to politicians, but it's still a relatively safe country.
Yeah, and just going back to immigration and what we've seen happen electorally, do you fear that Sinn Féin has lost support now to independents who promise a more robust response to immigration? And if so, what does that say about where politics might be heading?
It's impossible to know where politics is heading, because it goes through phases and goes through transitions. While you can see politics swing to the right towards populism, it can also swing back again. And we've seen that in Poland. We've seen that in the United States, for example, might swing back again in November. So, you know, it's never static. It's always changing. I do think there was a period when Sinn Féin was very popular, you know, was getting, you know, 35% in the polls when they were kind of all things to everyone. You know, so they had the support of, you know, we'll say young liberal people who are concerned about climate change, think refugees aren't being treated well enough, you know, very concerned about social justice. And at the same time, we're getting votes from people who
have a completely opposite
who don't like migration and don't like paying taxes, you know, and that's kind of fallen apart for them. But, I still that doesn't mean that they won't do well in the next election. They could still do very well.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what they say, you know, that you can't really predict what might happen in the general election based on the local and European election results.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You agree with that? You still think Sinn Féin could do very well in the next election, general election?
They could. I'm not saying they will. Obviously, what I'll be working towards in Dublin West is making sure that we hold our seat in that constituency. And I feel very strongly that anyone who is retiring should do all they can to make sure the seat is held by the party. And I'll be doing that. I'm working hard on doing that. You know, I think where we'll end up and what I'm working towards is a Fine Gael that's somewhere in the mid-20s that does better than we did in the last general election. And I think that will allow us to lead the next government. But it is all to play for. And one thing I've noticed over time, you know, studying politics and studying the media, a lot of people writing about politics seem to think that opinion polls are predictive. You know, the people who do the opinion polls don't say that. Opinion polls tell you what people thought a few days ago, give or take 3%.
How do you think Simon Harris is doing?
I think he's doing great. I always thought he would do well. And I think he's exceeding expectations.
Do you think what he's doing is sustainable? Like the energy that he has shown and the way he is working?
I'm not sure. You know, it's tough. And, you know, I see the hours he's working. And, you know, I worked crazy hours and I think he's working even longer hours than I was. Can you sustain that for 4, 5, 6, 7 years? I don't know, but I think he can certainly sustain it through to the next general election. He has enormous energy. He has really good political antenna. He has real empathy as well. He's a great communicator, a great campaigner. And, you know, all politicians experience a period of political honeymoon after they're first elected or appointed. I certainly did. And I hope that lasts a long time.
So that's what you're saying.
Well, through the next general election.
You know, there are some people saying that he can reach voters in a way maybe that you couldn't. You're saying everybody goes through this sort of sweetheart phase at the beginning of their term.
Well, look, that's what they said about me too. You know, I think in the months after I think for most of my first 2 years as leader, we were well into the 30% in the polls, and we had a very successful local and European elections, which was better than the one that just happened and the one that happened before. But nothing lasts forever. But you know, I suppose I had a political honeymoon that lasted about 2 or 3 years, and then a second one for a period after the pandemic. You'll see politicians though. Like Micheál Martin, for example, who can be consistently popular for a very long time. And I hope that happens for Simon Harris.
OK, will you be out canvassing now in the next general election?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one thing I really enjoyed having stepped down back in April was having the time to be out canvassing. And I was out canvassing a lot for, you know, 10 different candidates during the local and European elections. All but one got elected, unfortunately. One lost out very narrowly. And I certainly see myself canvassing and working very hard in this general election. One thing we decided to do in Dublin West now is Senator Ian McCurry and I have combined our offices. We're opening a new office at Main Street, Blanchardstown, and we intend to make sure that we deliver that seat for Simon Harris in the general election.
Which will be in?
No idea.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you for coming in. That's Leo Varadkar. We'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.